Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, February 28th. We're very happy to have the opportunity now to speak with chess master, Russian dissident, and global democracy advocate Garry Kasparov. These days, among other things, he is chairman of the Renew Democracy Initiative, which describes itself as a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering the public to uphold constitutional principles in their civic behavior. He is also chairman of the group known as the Human Rights Foundation. And maybe you saw Garry Kasparov's op-ed in the Daily News on Friday called How the Free World Gave Putin the Green Light. He also notes that Ukraine is fighting hard. Putin's army is not invulnerable. And if aid arrives in time, Putin could find himself in a difficult situation. He also wrote a book in 2015 called Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. So, Mr. Kasparov, I know you're very busy with the situation going on right now. So thank you for making some time for us today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You argue in your op-ed that the West, in effect, invaded Ukraine, not just Russia, because Europe kept doing economic business as usual with Putin after he invaded Ukraine and annexed Crimea from there in 2014. You wrote another op-ed published in the Daily News back then, and I mentioned your book from 2015, Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. Are you in the unenviable position today of saying, I told you so?
Yes, but it doesn't make me feel happy. So I'm watching to the latest development in Ukraine, and it's a tragedy, and it's even more tragic because it could be avoided if these warnings were not ignored, because we saw Putin's plans. He was not hiding them. Since 2007, when he made his infamous speech in Munich at security conference in Europe, he was not hiding his plan to reorganize the international order and to bring us back to the past, to the 19th century, where big countries could dictate smaller countries how to behave and run their domestic and international affairs. And he backed his words by actions, attacking Republic of Georgia in 2008, helping Bashar al-Assad to survive in 2013, carpet bombing Aleppo and other rebel strongholds in Syria, and of course, annexing Crimea. And he has been preparing war in Ukraine in plain sight. And that's why if this help could be sent to Ukraine 6 months ago, I think we could have avoided the worst. But now it's time to forget what went wrong in the past and to unite behind Ukraine. And that's what is happening. So I have to say that the last few days, they were absolutely critical in changing public opinion in the free world and also the policies of all major countries.
And just to be clear, when you say his infamous statement from 2007 in Munich, was that when he said the demise of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century?
Actually, he said it earlier, but in 2007, he actually supported this claim by laying down his vision that we should go back to the spheres of influence and reiterated his claim that the Soviet Union had to be reinstated in some form. So he believed, and he still believes, that a Russian dictator is in the position to control not only so-called near abroad, the neighboring countries, but also to spread influence across Eastern Europe.
And you make the ultimate comparison in your Daily News op-ed between that statement and the publication of Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler in 1925. Why go all the way to Hitler?
No, because the parallels are natural. So in 1925, nobody took Hitler seriously. And Vladimir Putin made more than enough statements and committed enough crimes for us to understand the danger coming from this man. He started war in Ukraine, and let's not forget, he, unlike Hitler, he has nukes. And yesterday he ordered Russian nuclear forces to change the status, go on so-called deterrence regime. And every dictator, before going down, could bring with him millions and millions of people. And I think we wasted a lot of time not recognizing danger coming from Vladimir Putin. Because back in 1935, 1936, 1937, many European and American politicians viewed Hitler as a populist, a demagogue, authoritarian leader, but the man they could do business with. The same mistake has been repeated with Putin, but unlike the politicians in the 1930s, many in Europe, less in America, but mostly in Europe, they were not simply ignoring Putin. They were doing business with him.
Mm. And if Putin always intended to capture Ukraine, why did it take him all these years to try to do it, including 8 years after the invasion and annexation of Crimea?
Dictators always looking for opportunities. I say that they never ask why. It's always why not. He tried in 2014, but he was not ready for open invasion. There were maps published in Russia that included about one third of Ukraine as so-called New Russia, from east on Lugansk to all the way down south to Odessa. That included 10 Ukrainian regions. But unlike Putin's expectations, Ukrainian people were not ready to embrace Russian troops. So he tried, but he failed, and he wasn't ready to send Russian army to subdue Ukraine. But every year, every month, every day in the office, and every time that he committed crime and saw no consequences, emboldened him. And in 2022, he decided that the moment has come. Actually, he has been preparing this war for more than 6 months. He even brought his Pacific fleet to the Black Sea. So it was all in plain sight. And the reason he did it, because he thought that he could win the war in 2 or 3 days, take over Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, put his puppet government, and the free world would back to the negotiating table. So he made many miscalculations, as every dictator made in the past. Ukrainian army is still fighting back. Ukrainian people are showing their heroism and resilience. And the free world, first time, now is willing to fight back.
You know, on the economic sanctions against oligarchs, Paul Krugman wrote in his New York Times column, and others, including Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine, are saying things like the U.S. has to be willing to take some economic hits in this country from really sanctioning the Russian moguls who live here or have money here. Are you focused at all on what that would require of the U.S. or even New York, and at what cost?
Look, there's always a cost when you're at war, but this cost is financial. Don't forget, Ukrainians are paying a cost with lives as we speak now, because in the last 24 hours, Putin changed his tactics. It's no longer an attempt to subdue Ukraine with minimal casualties, because in the first 3 days, Russian troops tried to avoid direct hits to the civil population. And now it's about scorched earth. Now they're attacking civilians. And that shows that Putin is desperate and he wants to win at any cost. So if Putin succeeds, God forbid, in Ukraine, that means that he will look at the NATO countries like Estonia. And then America will be facing a horrible dilemma to relinquish NATO and just walk away and let Putin win, or to put boots on the ground, because that's NATO chapter.
Yes.
So fighting in Ukraine today, it actually offers an opportunity to beat Putin and to ruin his regime, criminal regime, by not sacrificing American lives. And as for the gas price or other costs, yes. By the way, Europe will pay a much steeper price, because unlike America, it depends on Putin's gas supply. And Europeans are willing to take this cost. So I think it's very important to recognize, while the price is high today, it will be much, much higher if we miss the opportunity to stop Putin now.
Nora, on Staten Island, you're on WNYC with chess master and longtime Russian dissident and global democracy advocate Garry Kasparov. Hi, Nora.
Hi, good morning. I'm sorry, this question is probably going to sound very stupid, but I myself, and I've heard several people say that Mr. Putin has been playing chess for the last several years, and I heard Mr. Kasparov say that that's the wrong analogy, that he's really playing poker, and I don't understand.
Want to go there?
Thank you very much. That's a very good question, because there it brings parallels from the board games. It also explains the nature of Putin's regime. Chess is a game where you have 100% information available. You know exactly what kind of pieces your opponent can use. It's in front of you. And you know that it's played by the rules. You make a move, your opponent makes a move, and it's all, you know, follow the rules of the game. In poker, you don't know the cards. It's a game where you can make your educated guess. You can look at the opponent's face. It has plenty of psychology. And Putin was very good in bluffing. He always had weak hand, but he knew how to bluff. And he had, unfortunately, so much money and other resources to raise the stakes. So many times in the past, he bluffed and the free world folded the cards. And now he decided to bluff again. But this time, Americans and Europeans said, okay, fine. Okay, show us what you have. And we all discovered that Putin's hand was weak.
So there's no bluffing or facial strategy in chess?
Yeah, no, there's no bluffing, because you know exactly what resources your opponent can use to harm you. Psychology, yes, is there, because at the end of the day, every decision making is psychological. But again, it's nothing like poker. So this because there's so many objective factors that you have to take into account. But again, looking at your opponent's face and analyzing the nature of his or her decision making, it's fundamental, even in the game of chess. But in poker, it's paramount.
George in Hazlitt, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Why should we care about Ukraine? We didn't care about going into Iraq. They didn't mess with us when we went into Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, or wherever else we went. We don't care about Yemen. We don't care about Palestinian people. We don't care about anybody. What does Ukraine mean to us besides gas? What do we care about Ukrainian any more than we've cared about anything else? And why should we mess with Putin after he let us go invading half the Middle East? I don't understand why we're going to start World War III over Ukraine. Let him steal his oil that's close to him. We stole the oil that we could get. Let him take what he can get, and let's leave it at that. You know, let the big boys, you know, lose a couple of rounds today. You know, let the United States lose one for the team instead of going to war like we always do, like we're some kind of benevolent people, when we've been slaughtering people, supplying the weapons. And his weapons guys have to get rid of their weapons, too. They have to use their bombs, too, so they can sell more. So he's going in to get rid of some bombs and kill some people. So what? That's what we do. That's what America does. Why
George,
are we stopping him from doing it?
Let me get, well, first of all, I'm sure you want to respond to that, Mr. Kasparov, but I'm also curious how much you're hearing questions like that.
Oh, it's unfortunate that you hear it all the time. Sometimes it's ignorance. It's very little information about the rest of the world. I hope that's the case in behind this question that we heard now. Sometimes it's worse. It's believed that, you know, the world should actually live by the rules that Mr. Putin, Russian dictator, wanted to impose. Actually, I heard a little bit of this tone in the question when I heard this word "big boys." That's not the world we want to live in. We are trying to change the world. We're trying to make it's more just. We're looking for the world with less violence, less violence. We're talking about racial justice, social justice. And you cannot do it, you know, just separately in our country and ignoring the fact that the rest of the world and people like me and millions of us still look at America as a beacon of hope. America is not perfect. But, you know, don't tell me that, you know, the problems here, you know, they are so bad. America, you know, doesn't have rights to look around the world and still to lead the world. Because we are facing crimes that's hard to even describe. You know, we're still talking about genocide and Uyghur genocide in China and many other things. The war in Ukraine is not about Ukraine. It's about the future of the world, where either we live by the rule of law or dictators and terrorists and thugs like Putin or Iranian mullahs or Chinese communists, or name them, will dictate us how to live. And I believe that people have equal rights to live and to realize their potential, whether they're born in Afghanistan or in New York, whether they are living in Ukraine or in Great Britain. And I feel really bad, because I 1 hour ago, I had an interview for Ukrainian TV. They're doing it from the bunker in Kyiv now. I mean, these people are dying. The Russian cassette bombs, illegal, by the way, it's a criminal weapon being used to shell the civilian apartments in Kharkiv and Kyiv. So it's a war that could change the world for better or for worse. And by the way, I just said 10 minutes ago, so do you want, and that's a question to the person who asked the question, do you mm-hmm. want to relinquish NATO? Because that's what Donald Trump's plan if he was reelected. So do you want to walk away? Then you recognize that America first, you know, could be not a very lucrative alternative, because America's power is based on global trade and globalization that includes all the elements. And it means American leadership. And I hope it's being recovered now. And I'm very happy to see that Americans and Europeans working together to stop Russian dictator who could change this our world for worse for many years to come.
What about other autocrats? It seemed like Trump was trying to reinvent the world order when he was president, so that rather than the democracies of Europe and elsewhere being our prime allies in foreign policy, it was autocrats of the world who would unite around their common interest in post-democracy power. Putin, Bolsonaro, Duterte, Xi Jinping before COVID, Erdogan, Orban, I could go on. Is there an autocrats network uniting behind Putin now in any way that matters?
It's not as simple because, for instance, Erdogan now is helping Ukraine, and Orban, you know, through his teeth, he had to support the sanctions because Hungary is a member of European Union, and Orban is facing elections which we can lose in April. But you're right. 4 years of Trump helped autocrats to see America as not an ally, but as no longer a force that could stop them from spreading their influence. And naturally, it's not accidental that over the last 15 years, we saw the decrease of democratic influence around the world. So the Freedom House is telling us that less and less people live in the free world. Even if you include India now in the world of democracy, it's still less than 1/3 of the global population that live in countries where they can have a certain amount of influence on their governments.
And just briefly, I wonder if you would say a word about President Zelensky of Ukraine. I mentioned Katrina Vandenhoevel coming on the show on Friday, and she certainly denounced the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but she also sort of smeared both Ukraine, calling it a failed state, and said President Zelensky is not his own man, suggesting, I guess, that he's bought by powerful interests. I thought all of that was at best irrelevant to Putin's right to invade. But how would you describe Zelensky, who is looking like something of a hero today, refusing to be evacuated to safety, saying he wants military aid, not a ride?
He is not looking like a hero. He is a hero. And the fact is that he decided to stay in Kyiv, facing mortal threats, because we know that Putin's troops have an order to decapitate, as they say, Ukrainian government. And I believe it's not just simply removing them from power. And the fact that he stayed in Kyiv helped to keep the morale of Ukrainian army high. And they're fighting back. And what you just told us now about the comments that are so typical from the left about Ukraine being a failed state, it's bad. This is the nation of 44 million people. They're proud people, yes, and they now recognize that, you know, they are facing the greatest challenge in their lives, and they're fighting back. They're fighting back not only for them, but for all of us. And it's very unfortunate in America or in Europe, we still have people who deny their rights to be independent and free. And Putin knows that the free, democratic, independent Ukraine is the deadly threat to his dictatorship, because people in Russia could recognize that they are cousins. People on the other side of the border, they could decide how to choose their government. Since 1994, Ukraine kept changing presidents, and that's unfortunately never happened in Russia, because in 1994, first Ukrainian president, Leonid Kravchuk, lost elections and peacefully left his office. It hasn't happened in Russia. And let's not forget, in 1994, under pressure from the United States, Ukraine gave up its nuclear arsenal, the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world, 2,000 nuclear warheads that were sent back to Russia, in exchange, Ukraine was guaranteed its territorial integrity. Unfortunately, the free world didn't keep its word, and of course, Putin threw this into the dustbin because dictators never respect international agreements.
Garry Kasparov, probably still best known as a chess master, but also very well known to people who pay attention as a global democracy advocate, as well as Russian dissident. He is the chairman of the group called the Renewed Democracy Initiative, among other things. He published the book in 2015, Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. Thank you so much for giving us some time today on this very important day.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.